Hi, I'm Margot Van Ness from Park City and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City offers events throughout the season, including the annual Torchlight Parade, New Year's Eve celebration, Spring Groove, and more. More information about all the events happening at Park City this winter at parkcitymountain.com.
The Utah Olympic Park introduces winter extreme tubing. Take a ride down the landing hill of a Nordic ski jump in an inner tube. Enjoy the thrill of soaring just like an Olympic Nordic ski jumper. Full details and ticket prices are available at utaholympiclegacy.org. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
This is Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski Team. Keep up with the team's training season by listening to monthly reports during the local news with Leslie Thatcher, made possible in part by a generous grant from USANA Health Sciences, offering a personal approach to nutrition, business, and customer care. USANA.com.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us for KPCW's 6th Annual Sundance Reel. 2 hours of interviews with the directors of various films entered in this year's festival, all broadcast live from the Whole Foods Cafe at Kimball Junction. I'm Chris Cherniak.
And I'm Mel Larson. Each month, Whole Foods hosts a giving day whereby they donate 5% of their net sales to a local nonprofit. And today, KPCW is pleased to be the recipient of Whole Foods generosity.
That's right. When you shop at Whole Foods today, not only will you be stocking up on your artisanal cheeses, breads, chicken, and water, but you'll also be making a contribution to KPCW, one which helps support the station and all of its public affairs hour shows like ours, This Green Earth.
But that's enough about us, Chris,
absolutely,
because for the next 2 hours, we'll be speaking with the producers and directors of films and documentaries entered in this year's festival. They include Josh Fox, director of the U.S. documentary How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change, and Heidi Brandenburg and Matthew Orzel, the directors of the world documentary film When Two Worlds Collide.
And the second hour, we'll be speaking with J.D. Dillard, director, and Eric B. Fleischman, producer of the film Slight. Otto Bell, director of the Sundance Kids doc, The Eagle Huntress, and Penny Lane, director of the U.S. documentary Nuts.
That's all coming up over the next 2 hours, live from the Whole Foods Cafe here at Kimball Junction. It's KPCW Sundance Reel. Only in Park City, only on KPCW. And a special shout-out to Mark Miller Subaru. Love the experience at markmillersubaru.com.
All right. Well, Josh Fox, the director of How to Let Go of the World, will be joining us shortly. But our first guest is Debbie LaBelle. She is the Metro Marketing Team Leader for Whole Foods. And Debbie, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And hosting our
show.
Of
course. We are so thrilled to have you here. We've had you here for many years, and we look forward to this every year.
Great. Well, let's talk about a little bit about what Whole Foods does in the area of what, well, you're the marketing expert. So what is your role?
So my role is to do marketing for all of the Utah Whole Foods stores. So that would include the Park City store as well as the four stores in Salt Lake City. So that's Trolley Square, Sugar House, Draper, and Cottonwood Heights. And we put on events, and we do a lot of things for kids and moms, and we do a lot of community outreach, and we partner with organizations like yourself.
And you have these giving days. Talk a little more about what that
So
involves.
Each quarter, we are lucky enough to be able to designate one nonprofit organization as our community giving day recipient. So that means we donate 5% of net sales to that organization each quarter. And we love to reach out to hyper-local organizations and donate money.
So give us a feel for some of the organizations that you've worked with on that front.
So so in Park City, we recently partnered with the Kimball Arts Center, and we've donated to Swanner Eco Center and Youth Sports Alliance, lots of the schools. So we have some different programs for our local schools where we have our bag donation program, and we donate the bag credits to those organizations. So just tons of great organizations in Park City.
So Whole Foods not only kind of gives back to community nonprofits and organizations, but also you guys have some internal sustainability efforts and quality control measures that you are very, I guess, proud of and that you focus on. So talk a little bit about those.
Sure, sure. So we're really proud that we read the labels for you so you don't have to. So we
Nobody likes to read a label.
Exactly. So we highly screen our products before they come into Whole Foods Market. We have really strict quality standards, and there are over 100 ingredients that we do not allow in our food. So some of the basic ones would be we don't allow artificial colors, flavors, sweeteners, preservatives, hydrogenated fats, artificial hormones, or antibiotics. And then there are tons of other ones that we don't allow. You know, high fructose corn syrup is a biggie that we don't allow in our foods.
So I will not find...
No.
A product in here that has high fructose corn syrup.
Correct.
Really?
All right. Yes.
That sounds like a chat. Excuse me.
Chris, this will be a big improvement for your health.
That
you just
is impressive.
Start eating here.
Because that, let's be honest, all those elements, those compounds that you, that's a lot of products.
It is a lot of products. And we are very proud that we don't allow any of those in our foods here.
Are you seeing companies then modifying their products to satisfy these in effect these
in
demands,
some rare cases, if it's a pretty small company, especially a local company, they will typically jump their hoops to allow their product into our store and cut out those ingredients if they're able to.
So you mentioned local companies.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about how you are able to work with local companies here in Utah.
Yeah, sure. We're really proud of our local products that we have here at Whole Foods Market. We have, I would say, probably at least 80 local products at this point in time that we have in our stores in Utah. And we work directly with the local vendors to, we actually go through quite a process with them. We look at their branding. We look at all their products. We make sure they qualify. And then there's a process that we go through to bring them into Whole Foods Market. So it's really important. We love our local vendors, and we do a lot of our events with our local vendors.
Right.
We have them come in, taste out their food. Our customers can meet the makers of this great food. So we love local foods.
Is it mostly fresh foods, you know, grown fruits and vegetables, or is it preserved foods?
You know, it's a little bit of both. We do work with quite a few farmers and things like that. But then we also work with food artisans that make cheese and you know, popcorn. Popcorn is one of our favorite local foods here, and great for fits in with Sundance.
Mm-hmm. And I can vouch for that product.
It's a good product. And then, you know, we have other local ones that make soaps and lip balms and sunscreen and things like that. So it really covers a lot of ground.
Are the local vendors highlighted in any way? If I'm going down an aisle, you know, I see lots of different, like, popcorns. Will you... highlight the fact, a little stamp or sticker says local.
Yes, I'm glad you asked. There is a, and if you see a local product on the shelf, it'll say local, and it's got kind of a blue tag with some bright colors, and that's consistent throughout the store. So anything that says local Utah, you'll know that's local.
Okay. We're speaking with Debbie LaBelle. She's the Metro Marketing Team Leader here with Whole Foods. And talking about Whole Foods, some of their sustainability goals and protocols, et cetera, some interesting things about how Whole Foods does a good job at limiting or vetting out a lot of different components and elements that we would find, preservatives, artificial colors, artificial flavors, high fructose corn syrup, et cetera. That's really encouraging. Now, the other thing is that obviously markets can't sell everything. Buy before its expiration date. Fruits, vegetables, dairy products all have expire. What is done with those things?
Thank you for asking. We are really proud to be able to donate all of that kind of food to the Christian Center in Park City. And so we make sure that food goes out to people in our community that need it. And then in Salt Lake City, we also work with the Utah Food Bank. And so all of the food
Isn't necessarily.
Right, not expired, but that needs a place to go.
Okay. The expiration there.
Right.
Yes.
Give us an example, like breads or dented fruits and vegetables? Or
right, it could be something that's like slightly imperfect that isn't necessarily going to go on the shelf. A lot of local breads go to our organizations that we partner to, you know, the food bank and the Christian Center. So it could be vegetables, fruits, breads, could be granola bars. Could be pretty much anything.
Spans the gamut. So talking about fruits and vegetables, how do you guys go through that process? You know, when foods come in, it doesn't all just go on the shelf. Some of those things get set aside.
Yes, correct. We're very, very particular about the food that goes out into our store. So as we're kind of putting it out, we're eliminating the ones that maybe are a little bit imperfect or look like they're on their way out. And we're just very, very particular about what we put out on our shelves for our customers.
Here's a thought. Do you vet or at least consider the distance at which some foods, fruits and vegetables come from? You know, like, obviously we get seafood from Chile and other parts of South America. We get, in the winter, we get fruits and vegetables from South America or New Zealand or elsewhere. Is there a carbon footprint aspect to
Absolutely. We do our best to bring in products that are as close to our store as possible. It's not always possible due to the seasonality of fruits and vegetables and obviously seafood, but we do, our first measure is to find products that are as local as possible. And if we can find it in Utah, that's all the better. We do our best to reach out, and we're always.
But you're not going to find lemons and limes
right.
in the middle of winter in Utah.
Correct.
But will you sell lemons and limes in the middle of the winter?
We will sell lemons and limes in the middle of winter because people need lemons and limes.
No.
we want lemons and limes.
I think it's okay. I think it's actually okay to go a couple of months without a lemon or a lime or a watermelon or a cantaloupe and return to maybe more of a seasonal aspect of fruits and vegetables. You know, that, but I'm a minority, Debbie.
True.
You're talking to environmentalists here, so and that's where we come from.
Those crazy environmentalists.
But I would more than embrace. I'm all for taking a break from lemons and limes in January and February. I can survive.
I will put in your feedback.
All right, thank you very much.
You can fill out a comment card on my
avatar.
So we still have a few minutes left, and wanted to mention some of these services you have, some of these new services that maybe are very relevant to the crowd arriving in town today.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So we're really excited to be able to offer grocery delivery services. We have never really offered that consistently in the past, and there are a lot of people out there that maybe don't have time to do the shopping and don't have time to drive out to Whole Foods Market. So we've partnered with a company called Stacy's Grocery Services, and she will actually come out, do the shopping, and then she will deliver it to your door. And she does ask for 48 hours notice.
48 hours notice, okay.
Ideally.
Sure. But that's a great option.
Yeah, we have seen a lot of demand for this service. We've just launched it in the last, I would say, month, and we're very excited to offer that now.
And you also offer catering.
And we also offer catering services. We have a great prepared foods department, and we offer any kind of thing for parties or anything that you need.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, Debbie, thanks so much for taking the
time
to chat.
Thank you so much for having me.
Debbie LaBelle, she's the Metro Marketing Team Leader with Whole Foods here in Utah. And, again, thanks for hosting this community, giving this 5% day for us. And reminder that come on down to Whole Foods and do your shopping here today, because 5% of the net sales for today's sales will go to KPCW.
Thank you so
much. And that could mean millions, could mean like $1 million.
Could be.
That's what we're aiming for.
We're aspirational here.
Okay, that's your goal.
Glasses half full.
Hopefully we meet it.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, should we take a break?
We'll take a quick break. Right. We'll be coming back with Josh Fox, the director and screenwriter of How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change.
Support for KPCW comes from the Wasatch Brew Pub, offering weekend brunch at the top of Main Street featuring traditional favorites, as well as Midday Marys and mimosas. Private event space available. Wasatch Brew Pub, misbehaving in Utah since 1986. WasatchBeers.com.
Support for KPCW is provided by Sundance Institute, a nonprofit organization. Sundance Film Festival is proud to call Utah home with screenings January 21st through the 31st in Park City, Salt Lake City, and Ogden. The festival's home state is as important to our identity as our filmmakers. Find out what's next as film lovers from across the world come to Utah to celebrate the power of story. For more information, visit sundance.org/festival.
Live radio.
Live radio. We are broadcasting the Sundance Reel live from Whole Foods today. And we're here with Josh Fox, the director and screenwriter of How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. Josh Fox is best known as the writer and director of Gasland and Gasland Part 2. Gasland was nominated for the 2011 Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature and won the 2011 Emmy Award for Outstanding Directing for Nonfiction Programming and the 2010 Sundance Film Festival Special Jury Prize. So, Josh, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start by taking a minute to talk about your new film. Give us an overview.
Oh, and wow, just a whole overview
of the
film.
Just well, a 30-second overview.
Okay, sure.
We may have some other questions.
Yeah.
How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change is really the third film in this Gasland trilogy of movies, although it's a separate film all on its own. It begins with me recounting some of the fight against fracking that I've been going through for the last 8 years in my backyard, our hometown in Pennsylvania, in the Delaware River Basin, which is the watershed for 16 million people. But realizing that even though we've actually been doing really well beating the fracking industry, we've banned fracking in New York State, we've banned fracking in the Delaware River Basin, we've banned fracking all over the world in different places, France, parts of Australia, parts of Colorado. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of the victories of this amazing movement. I realized that although we could beat the frackers in our own backyard, we might lose everything we love to climate change. And not just everything in my own area, but everything in all over the world, that no one is exempt from climate change, and that we're facing really extreme circumstances and conditions as we go forward as a human race, from sea level rise, which threatens to wipe out our coastal cities and make them uninhabitable, especially along the east coast of the United States,
right,
to severe drought, severe floods, tornadoes, weather, the
loss of biodiversity.
And that's the one that hurts me the most. When you're looking at the projections for climate change, we are already at 1 degree of warming right now. We've warmed the Earth by 1 degree. That's been enough to get everything on the planet to start melting, and that's been enough to wreak havoc on our weather systems and really destroy a lot of our grain harvests and all of the different things, infectious diseases on the rise. You know, we could go through a horror list of what's going to happen with climate change that could take up the rest of this program.
Right, and that's a daunting thought.
Incredibly daunting. So the film, I kind of walk in and think, all right, well, let's investigate this and quickly find out that this is a very, very dire picture, and it's very, very late in the game to even start to talk about this because of all of the obstruction and denialism and prevention of science that's basically on behalf of the fossil fuel industry. We are in a situation where it's way too late actually to prevent many of the most negative and difficult consequences of climate change. So the film kind of hits a brick wall at like 100 miles an hour in the middle of it, and I kind of quit and resolved to find all of the things that climate can't change, all of the things that climate won't destroy. And that takes me on a journey across the world to 6 continents, 12 countries, to the Amazon, to China, to Australia, to the South Pacific, to Iceland, all across America. And, you know, that is an incredible journey, meeting people who are the most resilient and inspiring and just, you know, like some of the most amazing examples of human virtue that I've ever witnessed in my life. So the movie is an emotional roller coaster ride, going through the depths of despair and then coming out the other side with something that you can hold on to. And those are these civic virtues and civic values. The things that climate can't change are love, democracy, human rights, resilience, right, courage. And in each of these places, we find those examples. I think at this late date in our climate history, we're going to need to base our society on things that are different than what it's based on now. Our society right now is based on greed and competition and, in many ways, violence. We need to base our world on, you know, these other kind of sustainable virtues, community, generosity, love, peace, nonviolence, civil disobedience, organizing. Because if we are going to start winning the battle against climate change, we need those things. And if we are going to lose some of these battles against climate change, we're going to need those things even more.
So how did you select these places that you visited? Was it based on the community and the culture, or was it based on the science? Like, okay, they're seeing sea level rise in this, you know, small island nation. I'm heading there.
Well, the film starts in New York City with Hurricane Sandy, because as I, in my own backyard, started to realize that we're losing all of our hemlock forests, and that is the keystone species of the forests of the East. And just in the same way as you guys are suffering incredible damage to the pine forest in the West, right?
Here, yeah.
And you know, I realized that was a huge wake-up call. And New York City got the wake-up call next, you know, this hurricane that drowned New Yorkers inside of our own houses. Shocking. And, you know, there's no one exempt from climate change, right? So you could go anywhere in the world. But I think that, you know, we wanted to make sure we went to places that were going to be an incredible diversity of locations and places. And see, the Amazon, you know, where there are oil drilling going on at the headwaters of the Amazon, the Peruvian Amazon in Ecuador. We wanted to work with the islands in the South Pacific. There's an incredible organization called the Pacific Climate Warriors, and they are warriors, affiliation of people from 12 different island nations, who at one point blockaded the port of Newcastle in Australia, the world's largest coal export facility.
Wow.
And they're blockading ships that are the size of the Empire State Building with hand-carved canoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is truly a battle scene.
It's a very David and Goliath image.
And it worked. They stopped 578,000 tons of coal that day. So, you know, we're talking about finding the places where these battles are occurring on the ground and watching and meeting the people who have no choice. I think in many ways in America, we think of this climate change as some kind of abstract, well, maybe I'll deal with it later, or, you know, I'm not going to miss my kids' Thursday night soccer game, you know. But we have to start to think that way. We have to give an hour or two a week if we're going to start to talk about how we're going to survive this, and how we're going to withstand this, and how we're going to turn back. And that's what I found with people working on fracking, you know, people working in the fracking movement. And that, in many ways, led me down the path of the places that I was going to go. You know, those are some of the most devout, passionate activists in the world right now, and we're calling upon them. In fact, we're going to take this movie and tour it to all over the world, but first to 100 cities in the United States. Right after Sundance, we're going to Moab, we're going to Vernal, we're going probably to a place called Porter Ranch where there's a huge gas explosion happening. And we're going to tour this film to all these hot spots across America where we're fighting pipelines and fighting power plants and fighting compressor stations. And people can support that tour at our Kickstarter, which is bit.ly/let go and love. It's called the Let Go and Love Tour. So that's a Kickstarter, and I think it's on the front page of the movie page right now. It just launched yesterday, so that's bit.ly/letgoandlove.
Fantastic.
So it's the Let Go and Love Tour. And that's going to bring the film to these communities that are fighting the fossil fuel industry tooth and nail, and also places where we know sea level rise will damage significantly some of those major cities along the East Coast and along the West Coast, and the Gulf Coast, too.
You know, Nell and I host an environmental show. He's an environmental scientist, environmental engineer, and we've been doing this for almost 9 years, and we've seen changes here in Utah too. Utah is the home of the fossil fuel, many different types of fossil. It's coal, oil, natural gas that's extracted here. In fact, all of our energy comes within. It's one of the few states where all of our energy comes from inside the state. It's really interesting. But we've seen a real change in social activism here too. Whether it's with respect to air quality or water quality issues and land preservation. So that's since we've been here, I've been here since 07 or so. So you must have seen changes too since 2010 in GASA. And you talk about the successes with fracking, but other environmental advocacy movements around this country, around the globe too. So that's a hopeful aspect.
It's the only thing that is hopeful.
Right.
I have to mention that we have a hometown hero here who is now an international figure on climate, is Tim DeChristopher, who was arrested trying to blockade an oil and gas auction for an illegal oil and gas auction. Mm-hmm. It was ruled illegal in Utah, where the Bush cronies were trying to give away all these parcels of land to oil and gas, and he stood up and disrupted that auction. He went to prison for 2 years. and he's in our film, and we go visit the places in Utah that he protected. Unbelievable red rock country, you know, the kind of beautiful thing that you
and
think of when you think
risk,
about Utah.
They're still at risk,
of course.
They're still in play. Let's
yeah,
that
so
way.
Tim DeChristopher says wonderful and amazing things in this film. And, you know, the Gaslit films and this film, it's really my journey of discovery in all this. I was not an environmentalist. I didn't know. Oh, I mean, I'm, at heart I was, but
right,
I didn't.
Right.
I wasn't active on these issues. But it really is an emotional journey that, you know, I go through as we discover how this works. And the film opens with us winning, you know, and
right,
against fracking, and literally a victory dance, you know, and then realizing that that is just a tiny fraction of the puzzle. But, you know, again, what do I try to draw strength from? It's really watching people who are have this incredible sense of resilience and
right,
this incredible sense of responsibility and love, not only for the planet, right, which is this big abstract thing, pretty hard to think of and even, you know, but for their immediate surroundings, for their friends, for their families, for their communities. And that, in the end, becomes the thing that we do have to be inspired by. And of course, yes, victories are happening.
Right.
We won against the Keystone XL pipeline. We won in all these different fracking battles across the earth. You know, but we're winning a lot against coal. But what do we? Is it enough? Is it too late? We don't know the answer to the question. What we do know, though, is that we win every day when we invest in a sense civic virtue. We win every day when we let go of the world of greed and competition. We win every day when we start looking at how we can be kind and generous to our fellow man and fellow woman, and embrace those values and those virtues, and enter that other form of civic participation in other society that exists along those principles, which is happening right now across the world.
But at the same time, it's a daily effort.
Absolutely.
You know, because there are lots of wins, mm-hmm, but there's a lot more challenges. And it's a daily thing.
I see it that way, because to try to say, oh, well, a movie's going to save the world, or that's kind of crazy.
Or there's an end game to this.
Or anything like that. The world is lost and saved every day,
right,
not all at once. And that means it is a daily practice, and it is a daily responsibility, and that's what, you know, I mean, that's the fun of it, too. You know what I mean? To be honest, like, when I started this, when the frackers came to my backyard, I never felt more alone in my life. And now I can go anywhere in the world and intersect with people who are working on this. And that, they're not working on it for money. They're not working on it for glory. We're working on it for each other. And that means you're part of something that we don't often think about so much in 2016 in America, which is community. And so I urge people to come out, see the movie, get inspired by it, and then go the next step. When at our screenings, people will be able to sign up for renewable energy. People will be able to sign up for their local groups, local grassroots groups. And that's a big part of this Let Go and Love tour, is to go to places where we can help supply information about how whole communities can go renewable. So again, the Kickstarter is bit.ly/letgoandlove. And that's going to bring the film across. And that's our part of our distribution strategy. We toured with Gaslit to 350 cities
right,
in America. That took 8 years. This one will do 100 cities over the course of this year. Of course, it will be on HBO as well, and probably like in the summertime. But all the way until then, from now until then, we're going to be touring around America. And we want to show the film and see you, you know, in your town situation, which is what Sundance is at the bottom of it all, right?
Right.
It's just a bunch of community screenings here.
And you're also going to be starting with a screening for some of the local nonprofits here in town. I know that's happening in Salt Lake City.
We have 8 screenings here at Sundance. That's amazing.
A huge number of screenings.
It is. It's amazing. We have 5 on the schedule, and then we have, I think, 2 community screenings and 1 for high school kids, which I'm really excited about, you know.
Okay.
So we have one like every day, and they're at there is a website, which is howtoletgomovie.com.
Okay.
How to Let Go Movie, and that's where there is a schedule there, and the trailer is there as well.
So we have a few more minutes before we have to move on. I would love to know if there is a particular story that resonated with you. I'm sure many of them did, but if there's one that you can share with us right now.
Well, out of the most difficult moment of the film, where I encounter Michael Mann the incredible Nobel Prize winning climate scientist, who talks about how, when he talks about climate change, he talks about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, because they're all going to find a role in the climate, war, pestilence, death. I mean, I can't even remember what all the four of them are. But from that moment of apocalyptic kind of revelation, we end up in the Amazon, which is like going straight to the Garden of Eden, the most biodiverse place on the planet. And meet with these indigenous environmental monitors who spend all their time, they're not paid, investigating oil spills that are in the middle of the Amazon, deep into the jungle. And they do this just because they want to get the story out.
Wow.
So we were invited by Amazon Watch and said, you know, will you be some reporters to come along with us? And we said, sure, absolutely. And we trekked 12 kilometers, and we had to go one day in and one day out. So 12 kilometers in, so you got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, get in these canoes, paddle in through this incredible mystery. And, you know, everything in the Amazon just can kill you. You can't lean on a tree. weeks after I came home, wouldn't lean on anything because red ants just run up your arm. Right. And, like, but it's also the most astounding place. And then you get there and you've trekked, you canoe for 4 hours and walking through this incredible underwater soaked trail up, waist-high water, and then another trail for another mile and a half, and then you get there and you see this, you know, thousands and thousands of gallons of oil in the water, poisoning the fish of the local communities. You know, the Amazon River has 3,000 species of fish, more species of fish in the Amazon River Basin than in the whole oceans. And then you get there and you see these people who are being forced now to eat canned tuna, and because they have their resource base has been poisoned by the oil industry. But just to meet the resilience of these people, the courage of these people, you know, Latin America is the most dangerous place on earth to be an environmentalist right now. There are hundreds of people just murdered.
Right.
And so these guys going out every day, paddling 5-6 hours to get to these spills, 40-year-old pipelines that are not maintained, and spill and break and rupture. And at that point, it's not even a spill. It's criminal negligence. A spill is when you do something accidentally, if I were to knock my coffee off this table.
And
right
then
now.
It gets...
And this is an honor.
Permanent state of criminal negligence. And so we went with them to try to boost their story. And so those are the kinds of examples. Again, the Pacific Climate Warriors, where we battle it out on the out in the channel, you know, hundreds of meters from shore. When you watch people in hand-carved canoes that are no bigger than your dining room table up against a coal ship that's the size of the Empire State Building, this is true bravery. This is true, there's no words to describe it. You have to come watch it. And so these are the kinds of scenes that are in the film that are, it's not a documentary where you're sitting around watching a lot of talking heads.
Right.
You know, it's not that kind of a film. This is a film where you're really on the front lines. And we think of it as an action-adventure movie, which it is.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the Amazon, because our next interview is at the documentary When Two Worlds Collide.
I love that movie, and people should see that one too.
Okay.
Put it on the list.
Which is about the environmental issues going on in Peru, et cetera. So that's a great example, and a nice segue.
Too. Awesome. Yes.
Thanks for
totally
that, Josh.
I was happy to run into them here in the lobby.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a really fascinating work. We look forward to getting a chance to see it. And it's going to be, how many places are you going to be showing?
Well, tomorrow we're at Temple, 5:45. The day after that, I think...
Egyptian Theater.
Egyptian at 8:30 in the morning. Come out for that one.
Oh, boy.
and then we're in Park City. Salt Lake City.
And the Mark, and then down in Salt Lake City, and then some other screenings.
I think the community screenings are harder to find, but I'm sure they're on the Sundance website somewhere.
Yes.
But our website, again, is howtoletgomovie.com, and do check out the Kickstarter campaign so we can bring the film across America. Again, that website's bit.ly/letgoinlovetour or Let Go in Love.
Perfect.
Fantastic.
Thank
Thanks for joining us, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
All right, thank you.
Lots of luck. We'll be in touch. All right. Let's take a break. We'll take a break for a couple of underwriters and sponsors. And when we come back, we'll be speaking to the directors of the documentary, another environmental doc, When Two Worlds Collide. You're listening to KPCW and the Sundance Reel. We'll be right back.
Mark Miller Subaru is proud to sponsor the Sundance Reel on KPCW, an independent film at Park City Film Series. Mark Miller Subaru supports the community through our nonprofit partnerships and helps protect the environment with our green initiatives. Located on South State Street in Salt Lake City and Southtown in Sandy, offering a wide selection of new 2016 Subaru and pre-owned vehicles. Love the experience at markmillersubaru.com.
Wyndham Vacation Rentals is happy to continue our support for KPCW and the Park City community. Wyndham Vacation Rentals has been in business for over 30 years in nightly vacation rentals and property management with a range of services for our owners and guests. 649-6606 or online at wvrparkcity.com.
Support for KPCW comes from the Park City Film Studios and Crandall Capital. Now open for business, the studio offers three sound stages, 45,000 square feet of meeting and event space, and dedicated truck and trailer parking, each with its own individual power hookups. Site plan, stage layout, and more at parkcityfilmstudios.com.
Reel. We're broadcasting live from Whole Foods Cafe down at Kimball Junction.
That's right. It is the 5% giving day from Whole Foods to KPCW today. So if you do your shopping here at Whole Foods, 5% of that, the net profits, will come to KPCW.
So just don't come and buy like a pound of fish. You need to buy like 30 pounds of Chilean
yeah.
sea bass.
Buy out the store.
You need to buy a crate. Of okay. Not just a couple of lemons. You need to buy a whole crate of lemons and limes because 5% of the net sales go to support KPCW. All right. Well, we're interviewing directors, producers of various Sundance films, and joining us right now are the directors of the documentary under the world documentary category. The film is called When Two Worlds Collide. We have directors Heidi Brandenburg and Matthew Orzel. And I'm sorry, your name?
Tyra Ekba.
Yes. Okay, and Tyra. Well, we want to thank you for joining us this morning. First of all, give us a little thumbnail sketch about the film itself.
So the film is about a human tragedy of a bloody battle that happened in the Peruvian Amazon in 2009. And basically what happened is on the one side is the Peruvian government that wants development and prosperity in the country, and on the other hand is the indigenous people then want to fight to protect the Peruvian Amazon. And basically the story shows the political upheaval that led to a conflict, and the film basically lets the audience decide to choose for themselves.
And what's the connection for you to this particular issue or situation? What motivated you to focus on this topic for your documentary?
Whilst we were researching in Peru back in 2008, Heidi actually read an article that stated 80% of the Peruvian Amazon had been opened up to exploration and exploitation for oil and gas. We were instantly alarmed by this, and the opposition, which were the indigenous communities, were saying this is going to change our world. And with that, we decided to go and investigate for ourselves and see what was happening on the ground. And we were lucky to be taken to some of the most catastrophic areas of the Amazon. I say lucky, I meant just with very good NGOs that were working on the ground that had very, very good access right. to those areas. So we went in and were just shocked. It was just shocking to see. And that really kind of propelled us into investigating further and eventually finding our key character.
What were you seeing?
In the Amazon, particularly where the oil extractive industry is operating, not only do you see the oil on the ground, you can see how it's affecting the community's way of life. So, for example, there's no way of hunting because there are no live animals in those areas. They cannot fish anymore because the rivers are contaminated. They can't drink the water because it's contaminated, but yet they still do. So, you know, you see people that are very, very ill.
So everything has changed for them.
everything is their whole way of life has been altered dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely. And when
continuously.
We and when we traveled into the Amazon, I mean, we didn't expect to see this, you know, and everybody, you know, was talking about. Well, in the end, the whole film started is because we read the article, and what happens is the Peruvian government had brought out a series of laws that basically was stripping them away, the indigenous people away from the land rights. And so everybody was, like, the indigenous people were very upset about it.
Right.
But we, you know, it's hard to understand it unless you really go there and see it for yourself. Why they're upset about, and when you see that these companies go in and you know leave oil spills, then of course they don't want any more companies to come in because
right.
it is affecting their livelihood. They depend on the land, and that's the only way they can survive. So, I mean, when we saw that, that's where like, oh my God, nobody's talking about this. You know, they're talking about these great laws. They're going to bring in the you know companies in for more like development,
jobs,
and of course,
revenues,
you know,
et
yes.
opportunities.
Of course, and then you see this, and then of course it's gonna end up in an uprising. So our main character is an indigenous leader that led this protest. It was the first protest in Peruvian history. It never happened before, and they were opposing these laws that was basically stripping them away from their land rights.
Right.
All started. So, but in the end, unfortunately, after 54 days of protesting, the government wasn't paying attention. They just completely ignored them. And then they decided, oh, we're gonna, they need to go back to where they come from. And so this ended up in a lot of people getting killed. And,
right.
of course, our main character, at the time, all of a sudden he became the most wanted man in Peru. He was hunted down for sedition, conspiracy, and rebellion. He became the scapegoat. And then all of a sudden he had to flee into exile, and we were just in the middle of it trying to capture the story.
Right.
So we had no idea this was going to happen. We just ended up really... like falling into the story. We started it exploring about destruction and contamination, but then we met this incredible leader that was very passionate about protecting the indigenous land rights, and then we started following him, and then all of this happened, the protest, and he became then the scapegoat. So this is really what really happened, and now he's facing life in prison. And
along with 52 other people.
I'm sorry. Well,
along with 52 other indigenous people, he's facing life in prison.
Really? So he's going on trial?
For these protests.
Yes.
For the test. So people got killed on both sides. Indigenous people got killed and police. So that was a really big deal.
Right.
Yeah. So with all of this in mind, did you encounter opposition when you were trying to
right.
to film this and document it? I mean, I'm sure you were there in the midst of it.
I mean, yeah, we were. I mean, we couldn't believe it. I mean, when this happened, and all of a sudden he became this most wanted man in Peru, he was propaganda all over Peruvian television that he was a terrorist, and you know, and indigenous people were savages. I mean, it was terrible. And when we heard like he's going to exile, he actually called us and said, "I want you to come with us. I want you to cover the story because I want you to tell the truth." And we thought, yeah, we want to tell the truth because this isn't fair. You know, you weren't
right.
even there. He was in Lima, in the capital city of Peru, leading this, you know, trying to talk to the government. He wasn't even where all these people got killed. So we wanted to tell his story. And then in the end, it became more of a complex story, trying to dissect it all, you know, what led to this conflict. So this is what we're showing in the film.
We're speaking with Heidi Brandenburg and Matthew Orzel, the directors of the world documentary, When Two Worlds Collide. So right now, you're saying... The gentleman, Alberto Pizango. He's under arrest. He's in jail. He faces life imprisonment.
He's on bail, but he has ongoing trials that he has to go to. And they were going to call out the sentences on the 15th of this month, but they keep postponing it, so it's ongoing. We've been waiting for the trial since 2009. So
wow.
And that's just part of the trial. There's two trials.
Right.
and it just, they keep prolonging it and prolonging it. And Alan Garcia, who was the president at the time during all the protests, he's thinking of running again in April. So it, they could stall it until April, until the president comes back. We don't know.
Yeah. So this film covers the time period 09, 2010, etc.
2008.
So what's going on there now as far as the fossil fuel extraction, the oil businesses? Has anything changed?
I mean, so the you know, the irony on all this, after all these people got killed and Alberto is facing trial, the Peruvian government has brought out a new series of laws, you know, after they were repealed. And it's starting all over again. So it's even worse now. It's weakening all environmental regulations in Peru. It's weakening all the indigenous land rights over there. And it's like, basically, it's waiting for something to happen.
So obviously, you know, this story is still playing out in the real world. How do you decide when to finalize your movie and bring it to the festival this year?
I think it was... I think what's happening with Alberto is very, very important. You know, he faced his life in prison. And we made the decision to stop now to try and get this story out to the international audience. People need to take notice. They need to know what's going on. And if there's any chance that he's, you know, him and the other indigenous leaders as well, it's not just him. If there's going to be any justice, you know, it's going to come from the outside, not the inside. And this is the reason why we decided to stop the film. But that being said, as soon as the sentences do happen, we're going to go back and film that. And it will be cut back into the film. So, yeah, so we completed the film, but it's still kind of a work in progress.
It's a working document.
Yeah.
Right, like a lot of... Go ahead.
It's a cliffhanger. You know, it's always been a cliffhanger that we'd never have known what's going to happen and when to stop or when to bring it out. And like Matthew said, right now it is the perfect time because they're just... If they don't win the case now... They could all go into life in prison, including Alberto. And we're trying to get him here, but because when he was led into asylum, he was on Interpol.
Right.
And so now it's becoming very difficult to bring him here.
Sure,
to
he's restricted in his movements.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, but that still may happen.
We're trying to get him here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, as we said, you know, the previous president that brought out these laws, he's running again.
This is Garcia?
Yes, that's President Garcia.
So he left office.
Yes, now he's running again.
And is the oil industry nationalized in Peru, or is there American oil companies down there?
Yes.
How's that?
Yeah, more foreign. It's foreign companies.
American.
It's foreign companies. So there are American oil companies down there?
Yes.
Yeah. Taking it? All right.
So when people see this film, what can they do? You know, do you have recommended actions or contacts, or if they feel inspired?
Right. I mean, right now we are working on an impact strategy, so it's not quite ready. But right now we're trying to direct people to our Facebook site, When Two Worlds Collide, and we're going to start to post things to do. Calls to action.
Great.
And maybe websites of interest that people are going to need to read up on and will find of interest. So that's, you know, that's the first, that's where we're starting.
And especially, you know, the more people like our Facebook, the more people, you know, like the film and this film's become successful, this is going to go into Peruvian headlines in the media and people are going to be, oh, what's happening? Well, this film, you know, nobody's heard about this film and now it's coming out in Peru and then this is how change happens, and the people themselves living in Peru can take action after watching the film.
Will it be shown in Peru?
That's what we're aiming
to do.
Hopefully.
Absolutely. Before the elections.
Right. Before the elections.
I mean, that's the plan.
Yeah.
Is this your first environmental documentary?
Yes.
It's our first documentary.
What?
Feature film.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Have you been to Sundance before?
We came here as fellows in 2011.
Okay.
And, and
we're back.
Yeah, we're back, and so, now it's a film.
So how many hours, we're always curious about how many hours are involved in the cutting room floor and the editing. Like, how much time does it take? Because you must have miles of footage.
So just to give you a little bit of an idea of how long we've been shooting, we started investigating in 2007. We started development work in 2008, so that's kind of when we started shooting. We found the story in 2009, and we've been filming up until last year. So there's a lot of material, almost like almost 8 terras of material. So the edit, when we came to the edit room, luckily we had, or been working with a fantastic editor called Carlo Gutierrez, that really pulled all that material together to cut. Well, we got a 100-minute film.
Yeah.
But we were cutting like over at least almost, 1.5 years,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
at least almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm not kidding.
No, we believe you. That seems to be the standard, if not. There's a lot of time that goes in, and there's a lot of material that has to be left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
A lot of sub-stories or side stories that you wish you had time to also highlight. So, well, that's an amazing story.
It's a love project from the heart. I mean, we really sticked together. I mean, it was very difficult, for sure.
Was it hard to kind of keep up the energy and the motivation to make it happen? Did you ever just think, like, oh, let's let this go?
Well, here my dear friend Tyre, who is the producer, we were cheering up Matthew, like, we can do this, you know.
It's a roller coaster.
We went running along,
right.
You know, along the beach, you know, like trying to find motivation. So, yeah, I mean, we...
And filming, like we asked Josh, filming in the Amazon's got to be just a challenge in itself.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So talk a little bit about how difficult it is just to get in there with equipment and people.
Without ruining your cameras.
And not come out with... exotic diseases.
Matthew has a really nice story. I mean, we both almost crashed, literally, because when you travel inside the Amazon, it's not, you don't take big planes. It's like these really tiny little three-seat planes that are almost made out of paper. So if you do take off and there's a storm, and there's rain, then, you know, there's no, like, navigation system automatic.
High risk.
Yeah, very high risk. One day...
and carrying lots of equipment.
And then it's like, you know, it's the hiking into the Amazon for hours on end. It's hot, it's humid, there's mosquitoes, there's dangerous animals.
Anacondas.
You try to forget it, but it's an absolute nightmare. I'm not going to sell it as an enjoyable experience. We're really thankful to do it. And being in the Amazon, it's amazing. It's absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. And we would never change the last 8 years.
Or even Alberto, you know, getting us to walk in the dark through the jungle in the rain with all our equipment.
Right. Well, okay, I guess we got to wrap. But last, are you hopeful?
Yes.
I mean,
we're super excited about being here and, you know, bring attention to the film, and we hope to really make a change
with it. Hopefully that has a measure of impact.
Yes,
absolutely.
And we have 6 screenings here.
Yeah.
Tonight,
the first screening is tonight?
6 o'clock.
World premiere is tonight, at 6 at the Jarrow Hotel.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
And the screenings are all podcasted or so, are all on our station website, kpcw.org. So Heidi Brandenburg, Matthew Orizal, and Tyra.
Yes, Tyra.
You're the producer.
Yes.
Matthew and Heidi, the directors of the documentary When Two Worlds Collide. It's in the World Documentary section. You can go there and learn more about it. And tonight is its premiere at 6 at the Yarrow.
Yeah.
And then it's playing at other places around town and down in Salt Lake City. Well, we want to thank you so much.
Well, thank
you.
Thank
you for having us. Thank you for having us.
Great film. That sounds like a great film. Look forward to seeing that.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. We're at the top of the hour, and we're going to take a break for NPR News. So we're going to send it back to the station for a few minutes, but we'll be back.
Yeah, coming up after the news will be the directors of and the producer of the film Slight.
That's right. You're listening to the KPCW Sundance Reel. We'll be back.
Morning Edition is everywhere.
Monroe, Sao Paulo, Beirut,
London. Reporting from bunkers, alleys, jungles, and deserts. But most importantly, we're wherever you are. Start your day with a trip around the world and wake up with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Support for KPCW comes from Park City Live, kicking off this Friday night, January 22nd, with Cage the Elephant. Doors open at 6 p.m. for this early show, starting at 6:30. Located at 427 Main Street, Park City Live ticket information and Cage the Elephant's preview video are online at parkcitylive.net.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Right now, we are coming up to National Public Radio News. Thanks for listening. You are listening to KPCW Radio, only in Park City, only on KPCW, KPCW 91.9, 88.1, Park City. National Public Radio News up next.